Big Finish presents Doctor Who, Short Trips. Out of the Deep by John Pritchard, read by Peter Purvis. When Professor Wood came up from Basra through the marshes and the desert, he believed he would be the first man in perhaps 2,000 years to explore the remnants of Earth's oldest city. It was, therefore, a surprise to meet two other travellers who'd got there first. From the top of the mound, we watched him come with his local guides and bearers, a small group mounted on slow camels, moving across the wide and windswept plain. I glanced at the doctor. "Do you think they're friendly?" He regarded them with narrow eyes, his face inscrutable.
Yes, my boy, I should think they are. In places such as this, people draw a little closer to each other. The sun and sand are enemies enough.
I wiped my brow. It might be winter in this country, but the heat was still oppressive, and the land had had the life baked out of it. It was hard to imagine that thousands had once lived here, and this heap of rubble had been their city. The first on Earth, or so the doctor said.
"So why are they coming here?" I asked him. "Maybe they've detected something too." "Oh, I doubt that," said the doctor. "This is long before your time, the 19th century of your common era. Not even things like radio waves have been discovered yet."
At first, we thought the TARDIS had just landed here at random. But then the doctor realised that the instruments were picking something up. It was nothing as coherent as a signal, more like the mindless static of a pulsar half a galaxy away. But it seemed to be coming not from outer darkness, but from somewhere deep beneath our feet. Some kind of energy was buried here. Naturally, the doctor was intrigued, and so was I. We fetched tools from the ship and started to explore. As we worked, he told me about the Earth's far distant past. The place where we found ourselves had had many names, accumulated over the millennia. Sumer, Mesopotamia, Iraq. In this dry land, so lifeless now, the first true human cities had been built, and writing and mathematics were invented. Our voyage to the stars had started here. The place no longer looked like any human habitation. Just a cluster of misshapen mounds with heaps of crumbled mud bricks here and there. And all around it lay an empty wasteland. I'd never seen a settlement so thoroughly destroyed. The newcomers had halted on the outskirts. They must have seen us silhouetted on the central mound. Two figures detached themselves and started up the slope, picking their way between scattered rocks. One was offering the other one support, a helping hand to climb the steeper sections, but his companion, a young woman, seemed to make clear that she could manage on her own. The doctor had taken off the wide-brimmed hat that he was wearing. He fanned himself with it as they approached. The tall man took his own hat off in greeting.
"Hello there. Are you Europeans?"
he asked.
Yes, in a manner of speaking, the doctor said.
His face was still impassive, but the man seemed heartened, as if he'd found a fellow countryman in this bleak place. I guessed he must be in his early 50s, with an energetic look to him.
Professor Wood, how do you do?
I glanced at the young woman. She had a scarf wrapped round her face, and I could only see her dark, inquiring eyes.
You have the advantage of me, sir. I am a mere doctor.
The doctor gravely shook his hand.
We've been conducting a minor excavation here. Our ship happened to land nearby.
Wood seemed bemused by that.
Your ship, you say? The sea's 100 miles away at least.
The doctor gestured carelessly.
Indeed.
What manner of ship?
the woman asked. The doctor met her gaze.
The sort that does business in great waters, as one of your old books has it.
She loosened the scarf and pulled it down. There was a wry expression on her face. She was half the professor's age and rather handsome.
Forgive me, gentlemen. May I introduce my daughter, Jessica?
Delighted, I'm sure. This is Stephen, my companion.
She nodded to us, then looked around, putting her hand to the brim of her hat as the warm wind tugged at it.
One is reminded of the poem by Shelley. Round that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away.
And so they did, to the featureless horizon.
So this is Abu Shireen, her father said.
The doctor eyed him.
I take it that you know its older name?
Eridu, said
Wood, as if he hardly dared believe it.
Founded 7,000 years ago and lost to the world since before the birth of Christ.
A piece of mud brick caught his eye, and he bent to pick it up, weighing it pensively in his hand.
I fancied we would be the first ones here.
You deserve to be. You heard the call of history and came, whereas we are mere wanderers who chanced upon the place. Perhaps we can explore together,
Wood nodded. His gaze flickered to the shovel I was holding.
Have you found anything of interest yet?
He asked. Just some bits of broken pottery, I told him.
And the remains of a ziggurat, the doctor said.
He beckoned for Wood to follow him towards a heap of rubble. I glanced at Jessica, who was still savouring the view. I cleared my throat.
I'm sorry if we've disappointed you.
She turned her head.
By being the first, you mean? Oh, I assure you that my father doesn't care about such things. What matters are the facts, not he who finds them.
No, you should get on with the doctor then, I said. We crossed the summit of the mound and found the others standing on the lee side of the shapeless hump where the two of us had been digging before. The doctor suspected it was the base of a ziggurat, which he told me was a type of pyramid. We had shoveled away some of the sand to reveal a narrow gap in the old bricks. Wood stared at it.
Do you think it's just a cavern?
The doctor shook his head.
Ah, look there! A lintel of some sort, inscribed with a pair of crescent moons. It appears to be a passage.
He rubbed his chin, and I caught a glint of mischief in his eye.
Perhaps it wends its way down through the lairs of old cities. One could travel back in time. Imagine that.
A man could just get through that gap, said
Wood after a moment. Jessica gave a sigh.
Oh, Father, it's probably full of snakes, and it doesn't look all that safe. We should get some of the men to strengthen it.
We'll set them to digging in due course, Wood told her thoughtfully. But I might just venture in a little way. Would you care to join me, Doctor?
Certainly. Stephen, my boy, would you fetch the incandescent lamp?
I went to get the solar-powered lantern we'd been using. The technology was ahead of this time period, but no doubt he would find some way to explain it. Wood was peering through the cleft. He glanced up at the lintel, then gave his daughter a sardonic smile.
By me, you reach the place of lamentation.
They sounded like someone else's words. I looked at Jessica, who'd sighed again in an indulgent sort of way. She saw my puzzlement.
You aren't familiar with Dante? Those are the words he says are carved above the entrance to the underworld.
Ah, yes,
the doctor said, as if recalling them to mind from the great library he carries in his head. He took the lamp from me and quoted dryly,
by me you reach the place of lamentation, by me you come to everlasting woe. By me, you join the race beyond salvation.
I wondered if he'd known this man called Dante, a traveller like himself perhaps, a man who'd reached the ends of his own earth. But they were hardly the most reassuring words to ponder as we watched the two men bend their heads and disappear into that crumbled hole. Jessica and I were left to wander around the ruins, if you would even call them ruins after 2,000 years of sun and scorching winds. I liked her confidence. It made me curious. From what I knew of this Victorian age, young women were meant to be reserved and modest. Female pilots like the ones I knew would be unthinkable. "This must seem a rough environment," I ventured. She smiled broadly. "Considering what Miss Florence Nightingale is experiencing in the Crimea, this feels more like a holiday of sorts." She saw my quizzical look and cocked her head. "I take it you've been out here for a while?"
"We've been travelling," I said and looked around me. "To me, this is just a heap of earth, but it fascinates the doctor, and you too."
She came to stand beside me, gazing out across the desert. "Father always dreamed of coming here," she said. "And so have I, ever since he told me of it. People lived here so long ago that one has to strain one's mind to think of it. There was an inland sea down there, if you can imagine that, and they called this place the City of the Deep." It struck me that her father knew a lot, and yet so little. He lived under an empire that just spanned a planet, not a galaxy. A proud domain that would crumble just like this one and leave as little trace of it behind. The doctor told me afterwards that as he and Wood descended, his suspicions were first kindled by the nature of the dark. Of course, there was no light in the narrow tunnel, but the solar lantern cast a strong white glow. He'd explained it to Wood as an experimental lamp devised by Faraday and Davy, whoever they were. Yet, as they proceeded down the sloping passage, the lamp lit up less of the way ahead, as if the darkness was becoming denser and resisting the light's waves, or absorbing them. At length, they came into some kind of chamber. The lamp was as bright as ever, but it barely pierced the gloom. They were aware of objects in the blackness, but the size and shape of them were indistinct. And in the middle of the floor, the doctor sensed a gulf, not a pit, but a far more fundamental depth, like the hollow which a black hole makes in space-time, a distortion of the universe we know. He told me that a line of ancient writing came to him, no less potent from a scientist's perspective. "There are demon-haunted worlds, regions of utter darkness."
"Professor, might I trouble you to let me know the time?"
Wood took out his pocket watch and they looked at it in the small bubble of light.
"It's stopped," said the professor, "but I wound it just this morning."
But the doctor saw it hadn't stopped. The second hand had slowed down to a crawl. And then they heard a movement in the darkness. Naturally, it startled them, but neither was the type to turn and run.
"Aha!" said Wood in a voice that sounded brittle. "That'll be a rodent of some sort."
There was no further noise. After a moment, the doctor raised the lamp and started forward. The glow fell on a gaunt, hunched shape, and then they saw the figure of a man, or rather, what had been a man millennia ago. Its skin as dry as leather now, its eyes just sockets in a shrunken head. It was slumped inert in a stone chair.
The doctor ventured closer.
"My word," said Wood. "Look how he's been preserved."
The desert air had mummified the figure, though its robes looked set to crumble at a touch. The doctor began to move around the chamber and discovered other figures sitting stiffly in the dark. Withered skin and empty eye holes showed up in the light and slid away.
"Are these their kings?" asked Wood in awe.
"The first kings of old Sumer?"
The muffled sound of movement came again. The doctor quickly turned and held the lamp up. I can only guess what thoughts flashed through his mind as the light revealed a head which had been lifted and a mouth that slowly opened as he watched. Both men stood motionless and stared. A croaking noise came from the figure's throat.
It cannot be alive, said Wood.
Nor is it. Something must be manipulating it.
The figure spoke, or tried to speak. At first it was just gibberish, no language for the TARDIS to translate. But then the words began to form in thick, slow syllables.
"Who is this who comes?"
That was the thought that crossed my mind as I stared into the distance and saw a dark shape shimmer into view. The heat haze made it indistinct. For a while it seemed to hover in a limbo between sky and sand, not drawing any closer to our hill. Jessica had seen it too. She pulled her hat brim lower. "Is that a mirage or a man?" she asked. As we watched, it gradually took on human form, but elongated and distorted. I saw that he wasn't mounted, but on foot. And now it was clear he was slowly coming closer.
"But where has he come from?" murmured Jessica.
I wondered that as well. He was approaching from the west. There were no towns out there, I knew, just a burning wasteland stretching to the shimmering horizon and beyond. He must be a nomad of some kind. But even as I said it, I was asking myself, what kind of traveller could keep on walking through that heat without camel or companions, like the last survivor of some cataclysm? Something about his inexorable pace made me uneasy. Instinctively, I looked around, saw a chunk of shattered brick, and picked it up. Down in the chamber, the doctor stepped towards the shriveled figure, studying it with great interest, while Wood hung back, appalled. The empty eyes stared past him. There was nothing in this shell. Something was speaking through it from much deeper in the dark.
We are travellers. Explorers in an antique land. Who is this who speaks?"
There was silence then. He told me that it went on for so long that he thought the being in the depths had forgotten its own name. Then it said,
"Zael is what you humans used to call me."
"Which means that you're not human, hm?"
The doctor kept his gaze fixed on the corpse, although he guessed the thing he was addressing was somewhere in the void beneath their feet.
"I came here from another place,"
the dusty voice responded.
"But your race was not yet ready. I have slept."
The doctor glanced across at Wood. The professor's face was awed.
"Ready for what?"
he asked after a moment.
"The knowledge that I had to share with it."
Interesting,
the doctor said. He bent a little closer to examine a clay tablet held between the figure's hands. It was marked with a dense mass of wedge-shaped symbols.
"How long have you been sleeping for?" he asked.
"Where I am, there is no time,"
the voice of Zael answered.
"And yet This mound has grown up over 7,000 years.
What knowledge? Wood inquired, becoming bolder.
The wisdom to control this world of yours.
The husky voice was silent for a moment, as if a grip were being renewed on its withered vocal cords. Then it spoke again.
Are humans still at war with one another?
They are, said Wood. The tribes you must have seen have become great empires ruling half the planet, and four of them are fighting now in a dreadful war 1,000 miles from here.
And is one of these empires yours? Will you win this war?
I trust we shall, said Wood.
I ask not who shall win, but who will. How much do you desire your victory? There is much that I can teach you about weapons. You can defeat your enemies and put an end to war once and for all.
With weapons from the Bronze Age? Said the Doctor skeptically.
With weapons that no man has dreamed of yet.
How can that be possible? Wood asked him.
Bring me up,
the dry voice said.
And I will show you how.
The figure was close to the foot of the slope. The rippling heat waves still distorted it. I saw the men who had come with the professor were falling back and scattering, abandoning the hill on which we stood.
They fear him, whispered Jessica, although he's outnumbered 10 to 1.
I tightened my grip on the crumpled hunk of brick. Below us, the stranger began to climb. I felt my chest grow tighter. I'd thought it was the heat haze which had made him seem so tall, but as he came towards us, I could see that he was a giant, 1 yard taller than me at least. His frame was wrapped in cloth, protecting him against the sun. His shrouded head came up. I saw no face, just a crumpled mask and a vacant pair of eye holes. He raised one bandaged hand to point at us. He began to speak, but at first the words were garbled. The voice was muffled by his mask, and what I guessed were ages of disuse.
Danger,
it said harshly.
Danger.
What danger?
I called back.
This is a forbidden place,
the stranger rasped.
The beacon warns you. A threat to your world is buried here and no one may approach.
The beacon warns you? That must mean the pulse we'd picked up. Once upon a time, it might have been an obvious message. But how many things still mean the same after 7,000 years?
2 of us have already gone inside, called Jessica.
Then they shall die,
the stranger said. He began to climb again. I knew my only chance was to catch him off balance. I hurled the brick, but it just bounced off his chest. He raised his hand in a dismissive gesture, and a sudden impact knocked me off my feet. There was no flash, but it felt as if a bomb had just exploded, the shockwave emptying my lungs and leaving me convulsing in the dust. The stranger kept advancing. I glimpsed Jessica's pale face and willed her to get out of his way, but she snatched a rock from the ground instead. She raised it warningly, although she'd seen what had just happened. The stranger's hand came up again, and she braced herself, but didn't lower the rock. The stranger stopped and stared, as if intrigued by her defiance. I gasped to get my breath back. She was breathing quickly too.
You always were bold creatures,
said the stranger. Jessica swallowed. Who are you? She demanded. The stranger lowered his hand.
A watchman, set to guard this place.
And what's in there? I asked as I managed to push myself up to my knees.
The empty eye holes turned towards me.
Things which you cannot know.
Thank you.
bring you up? The doctor said. From how far down, I wonder?
From deeper than this world is wide, and yet so close that I can hear you breathe.
The doctor turned and looked into the blackness at the centre of the chamber, where he sensed the floor was there, and yet was not.
A lacuna in space-time? How can you cross its threshold?
There is a gate, and gates can be unlocked. See the tablet which my servant holds.
Wood approached the seated figure, peering at the object in its lap.
Cuneiform. Earth's oldest language.
Gingerly, he took it from between the gnarled fingers. As he lifted it, the symbols started glowing. Startled, he dropped the tablet. And it broke. The doctor felt a shift within the darkness, as if something had been displaced and sent a ripple radiating out.
There are other tablets. They hold me in suspension, but if they are broken, I can rise.
The doctor raised the lamp. The figures seated in the chairs gazed eyeless from the shadows. Each had a tablet in its hands. Wood moved towards the next one warily.
If the gate is locked, who locked it? Said the doctor.
The enemies of your race. They would have left you groveling in mud. I wanted to show you higher things, a road towards the future.
So they imprisoned you?
Wood took up another of the tablets. Again, the ancient words began to glow. He hesitated, staring at the script in fascination. Then let it fall. The dry clay split. Another ripple came up from the depths.
I could have taught your ancestors so much, but I was thwarted. Let me share my knowledge now.
Wood had turned to the next chair. The doctor stepped towards him.
Professor, wait a moment. Ask yourself, what knowledge is it that you seek?
A means to end this war in the Crimea. This suffering has gone on long enough. If this being can teach us how to build new weapons, then we can impose a peace that will endure.
He wrested the next tablet from its owner's brittle grasp and did not let it fall, but threw it down.
Your pain will be great, for you will have saved your people,
said Zael. The hoarse voice was the same as ever, wrung from a parched throat, yet the doctor thought he sensed a note of triumph.
I have no wish for fame, but if the knowledge hidden here can help my country, it's my duty to pass it on. We must defend our realm.
And then what? Asked the doctor. Will you pacify the planet, enforce your will and destroy those who resist?
Wood paused to stare at him, as if nonplussed by the question.
We are decent people, sir. Our wars are just. A common belief, the doctor said. What sort of nation would think otherwise, and thinking that its cause was just, what terrifying deeds would it not do?
He told me afterwards that he could sense a pressure growing at the centre of the chamber, like a black mud geyser ready to erupt. He moved to intercept Wood by the next of Zael's guardians, laying a hand on the professor's arm.
You may be decent, sir. I do not doubt it. But would you trust your dukes and lords to wield the weapons of a future age?
Wood brushed his hand aside and reached for the next tablet. The doctor seized hold of his wrist with what must have seemed to be surprising strength. Wood glared at him frustratedly and tried to free himself. Then Jessica cried,
Father, come away!
She and I had come down the dark tunnel with the words of the watchman ringing in our ears. We didn't know how long we had, just minutes at the most, and if our time ran out down here, we'd never see the light of day again. We saw the bubble of lamplight in the blackness and made towards it. I steered Jessica around what felt like a great pit in the floor. She called out to her father, and he and the doctor turned towards us. "Doctor, there's an alien buried here."
"So I surmise," the doctor said. "A visitor from prehistoric times, imprisoned by his fellow beings, I fancy."
"And one of them's been keeping watch," I said. Impulsively, Wood snatched hold of the tablet, and I saw it start to glow before he dropped it, and it smashed on the stone floor. The sense of an unseen void became much stronger, like a cliff edge crumbling underneath my heels. I swung round and peered down into the darkness. The funnel wasn't physical, and yet I felt its pull. In its depths, I caught a glimpse of something like an upturned face with bottomless black eyes. Jessica ran over to her father and grasped his coat. "Those myths you told me of, about the rebel angels who taught man forbidden knowledge. Those stories had their roots in something real." The thing in the abyss had started rising. Still infinitely distant, but I felt its hungry stare. Dragging my own gaze away, I turned towards the others. Jessica looked puzzled. She reached out and took her father's pocket watch. In the stillness of the room, I heard it whirring as if there was an insect trapped inside. She flipped open the lid and almost dropped it. The hour and minute hands were racing round. Wood barely glanced at it. He stared at her in consternation, then looked at the doctor.
"Who forbids? Can it be a sin to know?" "It is right to seek to understand the world," the doctor told him. "But consider this. A wise man once invented a new weapon of great power. He gave it to his leaders and they used it. When he saw what it had done, he was appalled. The men of science have known sin," he concluded, "and this is a knowledge which they cannot lose."
Jessica snapped the watch shut with a shudder. She tugged at her father. "Come, before he seals this place." As she spoke, the dark shape of the watchman came out of the tunnel and rose to his full height. He blotted out the dim light that seeped down beyond the entrance. The holes in his mask were glowing yellow now. For a heart-clenching moment, I thought we would be trapped here as he brought the place down round our ears. But then he moved aside to let us pass. Jessica eyed him nervously as she went into the passage, still clinging to her father, who was stumbling like someone in a daze. The doctor lingered and might have tried to start a conversation if I hadn't pushed him on ahead of me. Glancing back as the darkness swelled behind us, I saw the watchman poised as if to plunge into the depths. Then, as we struggled up towards the daylight, I felt a sudden jolt go through the hill. Dust showered down on us from the low ceiling, but we managed to reach the open air unscathed. The doctor dusted himself off.
"Well, that seemed a minor tremor, considering that a fragment of the universe has fallen through."
I peered into the tunnel's murky entrance, remembering the black eyes staring up from the abyss. I thought that dismal face would haunt my nightmares. "This alien, it won't follow us?" I asked. The doctor shook his head.
"It was suspended in a hidden pocket of space-time, a sentence of eternal punishment. When it looked as if it would get out, this sentinel you met went down to the pocket and caused it to collapse. Perhaps it crushed them both into oblivion, or it may have bubbled up elsewhere and they'll fight within its confines endlessly."
He turned to the professor and his daughter, who seemed stunned by their experience, understandably enough.
"Perhaps it's best," he said, "if you don't speak of this adventure."
"Whoever would believe us?" murmured Wood.
Jessica took him by the arm.
"But we'll know, Father, won't we? We can tell the world about Eridu, but its truth is a secret shared by us alone. Stephen and I will be leaving presently. It's quite safe to start your excavations now."
He went to shake the professor's hand. Wood eyed him thoughtfully.
"I take it you believe mankind will acquire more dreadful weapons in due course."
The doctor sighed. "Alas, I know of no way to prevent it. We can only hope, Professor, that their moral sense evolves at the same rate."
He shook Jessica by the hand as well.
"You quoted Shelley's poem, Miss Wood, but his friend Horace Smith wrote of Ozymandias too."
And looking round at the empty plain, he quoted,
"What powerful but unrecorded race once dwelt in that annihilated place?"
Was that a comment on this ancient landscape, or a warning of a future yet to come? That was a question I couldn't help but ponder as we walked down the hill towards the waiting ship.